We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Glad you're with us on a Tuesday morning. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. We are on Sirius XM Channel 80 and your smart speakers as well. We've had a lot of interesting conversations already this morning. We talked to Taj Boyd not too long ago, former Clemson quarterback, about his reaction to Dabo Swinney and the statement he made. And basically, maybe more importantly, the statement of quarterback Trevor Lawrence made well before Dabo made it, basically putting it out there that this is not right and we need to stand together as white men, white leaders, white quarterbacks on teams, and understand this is not just your problem, it is our problem.
I do think, Mike, to the point you made earlier, that you're basically your generation. I mean, you're 30. These guys are in their early to mid-20s who are not afraid to being vocal. And I guess this is their era of being vocal, right? This is what social media is, to put your thoughts out there. So it's second nature to your age group of people to, if you have a thought, you get it out there. You know, and you take on all comers and you react and with your opinion when other people give their opinion. And overall, that's, I think it could be used as such a good thing because you get to see people's views on this and hopefully have discussions and hopefully have people listen in those discussions.
Yeah, it's been interesting to just watch everyone. And Trevor's an interesting case study because he's going to be the biggest name in college football going into this season.
No question.
And he was last year going into it before Joe Burrow came and LSU's team, you know, lit everybody up the way they did. He's going to be the biggest name going into college football this year. And I think I saw David Hale tweet about this, who covers the ACC really well, and mentioned, you know, hearing from Trevor Lawrence, he's a guy who has struggled to try and figure out, all right, how do I use my platform? What should my voice be? Can I be more than just this, you know, cardboard cutout of exactly how you draw up a quarterback if you were making one in a lab? And so for him to take all that seriously enough and then to come out and say this, it is maybe, you know, a younger generation being more comfortable setting up, but it's still something that had to be a decision he made, and it's a pretty big one.
Yep. It absolutely is. We also had a chance to talk to Doug Glanville, baseball analyst, of course, who played many years in the majors. He believes that we're headed toward a season, and he also shared his experiences as an African-American man. Again, for those that don't know, Doug Glanville, at one point, I think it was in 2014, he was shoveling snow in his own driveway in the city in which he lived, and a policeman from another city who had no jurisdiction at all in where Doug Glanville was came up and just assumed that he was a guy shoveling snow for a few extra dollars.
Yeah, and it just walked in the neighborhood and started shoveling snow to try and get money, and he's like, well, I live here. But, I mean,
this is my house.
To have Doug explain it and as the officer was approaching, what to say to make sure the situation doesn't get out of hand. I mean, again, we go out and shovel our driveway. You don't think about it twice. I mean, this is, I'm sure he wasn't expecting it that day, but that's what he had to deal with.
SWB, shoveling while black, is what that was. But, and again, to think about it, he had to go through the mindset, okay, what do I need to do to defuse the situation when I have done nothing but take care of my own property?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess that's the, people get very off put by the phrase white privilege and like the things that come along with it because they just assume it goes like regular privilege where you're given something. And a lot of people struggle. Like Dabo Swinney, for everything that he's, you know, been pointed at in this conversation, it is the perfect example of this. No one disputes Dabo's life was really bleeping hard.
Right.
Like, we just talked to Taj, and he said one of the things that appeals to so many guys is they see the way Dabo struggled to have to get where he is. But as Taj put it, that doesn't mean that the ways we all get to this point aren't very different. Even if we all have struggles, they're different struggles. We have to go through different things in all of this. And so it's not that anyone's problems aren't valid or real in all of that. It's just that you don't have to explain yourself in a lot of the spaces that you encounter, that you find yourself in, like Doug Glanville in his bleeping driveway. So that's all that is. It's not an attack on how hard anyone's life has been.
No.
I thought that was, you know, one of the best points among many that Taj made in all of this was, we all recognize what Dabo went through. It is a common ground for so many guys that come there. But he said that doesn't mean that everyone's journey to that point is the same.
Right, exactly. And we'll continue to have those conversations. Arike Gunbowale is going to join us a little bit later. She put out some very interesting comments on Twitter about why she went to Notre Dame and what she heard from the coaches during the recruiting process and while she was there that sort of validated her decision and her choice and she chose to play.
And basically telling others, especially high school, you know, athletes that are being, you know, looked at for colleges, look into the coaches. You know, this may open your eyes even more on where you want to go and why you want to go there and the person that is going to be around you a lot for those 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, find out who's going to have your back. The same way Taj mentioned, you're seeing Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence told the teammates that they go to work with every day, I've got your back. She's saying, find that out from your coach. Who's going to be with you?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll talk to her in just a little bit. But it's also 100 days away, guys, supposedly.
Yeah.
From the start of the NFL's regular season. And the NFL has had the longest runway in the ramp to sort of deal with the pandemic, because they haven't had to play. They haven't had to sort of figure out what every other sport is trying to do, find a way to start or find a way back. They're just sort of getting ready for when they believe training camps may open at the end of July. And we've certainly seen states, including many states, hit very hard by the pandemic. California, New York, basically saying your facilities can open now and we're getting going because this would be the time where you would have those OTAs and all that kind of stuff. And most teams are just doing visual workouts and visual off seasons, even though the Saints and Sean Payton had said, just get yourself in shape and show up for training camp and we'll get ready to go. So one of those things you normally do during the time of this is basically it's list season, right? It's been perpetually list season for a while.
You know, Trey, I'm the biggest fan of your top three lists around here, maybe at this company, but at the very least on this show. And so anytime I see a list, my eyes light up. And this one from Adam Schein was a doozy NFL.com.
Adam Schein on NFL.com. Basically, he went down. Let's do the prediction thing.
Bold predictions for the 2020 season.
And, you know, he starts off the article with go big or go home. So, you know, he's swinging here, right? That's the first thing. He is looking for the 500-foot home run. He's not trying to advance the runner with a ground ball to the right side. So understand the premise here.
Yeah, so he went 9 bold predictions for the NFL season. And number one was the Patriots will collapse to a top 5 pick in the 2021 NFL draft. And he, like, in very book it fashion, decides to heat it up right away in the very next sentence. It says, by Labor Day, I might even push this to top 3 or on the clock.
Which I find hilarious because by Labor Day, they still will have not played a game.
And by the way, I'm not buying this one at all. Last year, the 5th pick of the draft, or this past draft, was Miami, and they were 5-11. New England's not going to be 5-11.
There is zero chance New England is 5-11.
Not going to happen. So I will take that one, and I will shove it.
It's funny you said that.
I'm not booking it.
The last sentence in his paragraph is this season in Foxborough has 5-11 written all over it.
No way.
On polar opposite ends of this one. All right.
So let's ask this question. So he's putting out there 5-11, right? In your mind, barring catastrophic injury and all that, what is the worst scenario for you for the New England Patriots this year?
I think dead even 500.
That's exactly what I said.
There is no way.
I won't say
Adam,
no
we
way.
Love you.
I won't say there's no
we
way.
We love you, but there is almost no way that this team isn't going to be at worst 8-8.
Yeah,
no,
I push that one down.
No, I wouldn't say there's no way.
I'm not booking it, and it's neither.
If I had to bet a large sum of money, I would say the absolute floor would be 7 wins.
Yeah.
That would be the absolute floor. I'd say the most likely is 500. So let's move on.
Okay.
Number 2, Raiders running back Josh Jacobs will win the rushing title.
Wow. What do you have? 1,150 yards last year, forced the most missed tackles as a runner as well. Missed the last game, did he not? If I remember correctly.
Yep, think so.
He is poised a good runner.
They're a very good runner.
Redoing that O line there to help out some.
Well, and their O line was good last year. It's been a resurgent group.
It has, because it went down for a while after being one of the best with Dallas a few years ago.
But didn't they get Henry Ruggs?
Well, so interesting. I saw this. There was some stuff the other day about an injury that Henry Ruggs suffered while moving. It sounds like he's going to be fine. Had to be a real hold your breath moment for Raiders fans. Yeah. But the point he brings up in this article is, all right, you add Henry Ruggs as a piece to take it over the top. You had great production from Darren Waller at the tight end position last year that you can keep going along with. If the offense gets better, in his mind, it gives him more opportunity to be less focused on by defense.
See, I would look at this the exact opposite way. By default, because they didn't have a lot of wide receiver options last year, Josh Jacobs got the ball more. I don't think Josh Jacobs is getting the ball more this year. I would argue he's probably going to get it less. That doesn't mean he won't be effective, but he just won't have as many opportunities. If you have Waller and then you go and get Ruggs, which is the most Raider thing of all time, speed, then you're going to go in that direction. So to me, the addition of Ruggs means you're not going to see as much production by Josh Gibbs. He'll still be productive, he just won't have the opportunity.
So he had 242 carries last season. Derrick Henry, who won the rushing title, actually narrowly beating out Nick Chubb, who
was a lot closer than we thought.
Would have taken me a long time to realize how close that one is. Derrick Henry had the league high with 303 carries last year. And so, to your point, I'm not sure that number, 242, gets closer to 303.
By the way,
I'm not sure the reliance is there.
Very quickly, Derrick Henry played 15 games. He also missed a game.
Yeah.
So add that in there as well. I do not think, I'm going 0-for-2 here. I do not think Josh Jacobs, while I think he's a hell of a runner, is not going to lead the league in rushing.
Who do we think might lead the league in rushing?
Well, I mean, you got to put Derrick Henry up there again. Nick Chubb, I mean, my God, Chubb's that true. Offense and what the weapons that they have.
So many mouths to feed.
I know. I don't think he is. Christian McCaffrey, I mean, he's still the man there. That's a team that's rebuilding.
He's the one, I think, and it's just interesting because they use Christian so much as a receiver that might hurt his cause, but he is going to be basically the only thing they have to rely on in an offense that's trying to change its face.
Yeah, I just, to me, McCaffrey and specifically Derrick Henry would be the club.
I would put them as a two.
But again, the whole thing for this for Adam is bold.
So. Right, exactly.
Worth noting, too. Ezekiel Elliott has won the rushing title in every year that he has played every game and had a full preseason. So he's a guy, and especially this year, we know that offense is going to be wild. The difference is, again, and Trey, we pointed this out, I think the changing way that offense is going to look, being more reliant on Dak and his arm and those things, might make winning the rushing title, which it's a volume stat. It's not the most efficient. It's not the way we should gauge rushing success at this point. But
by the way, you know who was only 334 yards away from being the leading rusher in the league? Lamar Jackson.
That's going to change.
Let that settle in a little bit, huh?
I mean, you know what? Like, it might change. He's one I have a tough time betting against on the ground because he's such a freak. And as that offense gets better, it's only going to get it.
Wow.
That one's a fascinating.
On 176 carries as opposed to 303, he played 15 games as well. So same amount of games as Derrick Henry.
Oh, man.
Right, so we're all,
that was a baller season.
It was incredible. So we're all moving those aside.
All right, so number three.
This is, by the way, I want to point out very specifically, the only reason we're actually doing this is because our producer, Evan, is the biggest Jets fan. He's texting me as we're doing, get to number three.
Oh, my God.
Get to number three. Okay, Evan, our fine producer and our Jets fan extraordinaire, here it is, Adam Schein's number three bold prediction. Quarterback Sam Darnold will become a star.
So I'm going to be honest. There are nine things on this list, and I don't know if we're going to get to all of them because the rate we're digesting this is no chance. There are three that I'm really in on, and this is one of them.
I agree.
Well, especially because this is just, to me, so predicated on the idea. Like, all of these are contingent upon health.
Yes.
I think we all go into that with the underlying subtext.
And we can rule mono out this year.
And that's the thing is, the guy missed five games or whatever it was with mono, like, and he still showed signs of being good when he was back. And this team is going to be one that has to improve, like, just by nature of acquiring human players, they've gotten better this offseason. Now, you know, losing some of the production at the receiver position.
With Robbie Anderson
being gone. But still, it seems like there's a step forward.
They got the wide receiver out of Baylor in the second round. A lot of people had a first-round grade on. And now, shockingly, I have a read here about Sam Darnold.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know how they decided to put these two topics together. But over his last eight games, post-mono, Sam Darnold was Pro Football Focus's eighth-graded passer, despite being pressured at the highest rate, 41.9%. When kept clean, he ranked first in accuracy and percentage and fourth in passer rating. and the Jets upgraded their offensive line this offseason. So all of that is proof that Jets fans should be excited about their third-year quarterback. Proof is brought to you by Pennzoil. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE5W30.
I think he himself has the potential to become a star, and I think the team was going to be the thing that holds him back from it right now.
Okay.
There's just not enough around him. There isn't.
I think the nature of a star is someone that tends to elevate, though. Like, well, it would be a very Carson, like, I think last year's Carson Wentz, right? A guy who, despite the world around him falling down due to injury, really elevated that team. That would have to be what Sam Darnold pulls off here.
I just don't think there's enough there to do it. I just don't.
I like it. I'm buying this one.
Of the three we've done, I think this will be the closest one right now.
But are you buying or selling it?
Oh, well, we got a new game. Buy or sell.
Are you buying or selling?
Lover shove.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What's the definition of a star?
That's a great point.
You know it when you see it, right? You're going to know.
What is this, Congress and porn?
Yes. Yes.
For those that don't know.
This is Golic and Wingo, Congress and porn.
I feel like you can't just drop that one out there with some context. In the 80s, the president did this commission on pornography, and they had literally congressmen and senators walk into seedy adult bookstores, and the thought process, porn is you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
So now that everybody knows, and they're frantically Googling, what did Golic just say Congress and porn? I just want to make sure we have the qualifier out there.
All right.
There.
So that's your definition for me?
Yes.
You know it, you see it?
Yes. Are you buying or are you selling that?
By the way, that was a great analogy. I just want you to know that.
I'm still selling.
All right. There we go.
That's, I might buy it.
You know what? I have my hand in my pocket reaching for my money.
You're like Stu Gatz. You're not sure if you have any money in your wallet.
I got to see how much money I have in my wallet.
To recap, he just used the phrase Congress and porn and then says, I have my hand in my pocket.
If for
all
reaching,
right.
I said all reaching right. for money.
All right.
I made sure I said reaching for money.
Moving on.
Please move on.
Instead of going through all the other nine on this one, I want to take you one of the guys to the ones that I'm buying of this last group, and I want to see if you're buying or not. So to be clear, one of them was Sam Darnold star. Trey, you are buying. Dad, you are not buying. You have your hand in your pocket, reaching for your wallet.
Right.
You're not buying, though.
Not buying just yet.
All right. We're going to move past six because Patrick Mahomes.
What about four?
We're going to move past four, too, because that's not what I'm buying.
You go ahead and pick.
Four is Coach of the Year Mike McCarthy's Cowboys will be the NFC's number one seed. I'm not buying that one, and so I was going to bring you the ones that I'm buying.
Let's go ahead and get to the ones you're buying because we're going to run out of time.
Exactly. We're going to move past six because Patrick Mahomes throwing 51 touchdown passes if he's healthy.
He should throw them every year.
There's just no shot that's happened.
Number seven, Steelers wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster will dominate once again.
Yeah, I'm not buying that one.
See, I'm buying this.
I'm not buying that one. And now listen, he had a terrible first year as receiver one because he was 1A when Antonio Brown was there. But they went through all the quarterbacks. Ben Roethlisberger is back. And the presumption is that when Ben is back, Juju will be Juju again. But we never saw Juju be Juju without Antonio Brown. So until I see it, I won't believe it. I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm certainly hoping for him that he does do it. But until he shows me, because we all know there's a giant difference between receiver one and receiver 1A. And sometimes that is a transition that is hard to make. So until he can do it, I'm not buying it.
I have seen firsthand on that team the difference of what happens with Ben Roethlisberger on and off the field in that spot. And the two words that he mentions here might be two of the most important ones. Contract year. There's talk that Juju Smith-Schuster might not be back in Pittsburgh after this season. Contract year. I think this dude is going to ball this year. I think this offense, if Ben, like, again, presumed health. Ben Roethlisberger staying healthy. He's 38. He's coming off injury. I get all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, man, having him back around for an offense now, a year after what Juju went through, going through that and feeling what it was like for the first time to be the one in some adverse spots, I think he might have a newfound appreciation for this. I'm buying.
I feel that this is dependent on Ben staying healthy. So I'll assume that, which I know is horrible to do. I think I'll buy this one.
All right. We got a buyer.
I stand alone.
All right. So.
And I'm not down on Juju. I just want to be clear.
It sounds like you are, but we'll move on through it. So Trey Wingo down on Juju Smith-Schuster.
Topic bar.
Last one here I'm buying.
Okay.
The Lions' Matthew Stafford will lead the NFL in passing yards.
Again, presuming health.
But that's yeah. So that's my exact point with all three of these is in one way, shape, or form, whether it was in Matthew Stafford and Sam Darnold's case, their own health, or in Juju Smith-Schuster's case, the health of his quarterback and the round-robin situation hellscape that was last year for a team that still would have made the playoffs under this year's current format, worth noting.
Yep.
Matthew Stafford, the pace that he was on to start last season before injury ultimately robbed
ridiculous.
Him was ridiculous. It was getting MVP buzz. I think this is a team that has continued to fortify around him, and I think Matthew Stafford still has some, like, we forget relative to the quarterback life cycle. It feels like he's been around forever. Matthew Stafford is still quarterback young, and I think this guy is prime for a season to continue off that pace that we saw at the start of last year. So buying this one.
Who are the guys we think? Now, Jameis last year led. He's not even going to be the starter.
It's going to be Mahomes every year in the conversation.
Did we know last year that Dak Prescott was second in the league in passing yards?
He was 1 yard shy, 49.02. Tony Romo's franchise record was 49.03. He was 1 yard shy.
Then you have Jared Goff third, Phillip Rivers fourth, but that won't be that way because he had the 2,000-yard receivers. You had Matt Ryan that was fifth. Oh, I think if he stays healthy, I absolutely would buy this. I absolutely think he could lead the league in passing yards.
By the way, real quickly to where this started with the Patriots getting a top five pick, per our fine researcher Joshua Boyd, the Patriots last had a top five pick in 1994. 1994 when they selected Willie McGinnis, number four overall.
It is going to be very interesting, but again, looking at this list, you have nine predictions like that, and I think the ones tied to injury, and we see this on a team level every year, the injury and how many games you're getting back from the season prior tend to be a pretty solid predictor of areas you can find improvement, especially at the quarterback spot, which all three of these that I mentioned were anchored to. I think it's a pretty interesting room for a jump and for growth here.
Absolutely, and kudos to Adam Schein for giving us the content that we wanted to talk about and chop up so much.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Golic and Wingo with you on a Tuesday morning. Glad you're with us. We are presented by Progressive Insurance on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. So a lot of people are speaking out, and a lot of people make sure they want their voice to be heard in the wake of what we saw with the killing of George Floyd and the unrest that has followed, because it feels like a pattern of lather, rinse, repeat. We're waiting for a lot of prominent voices to speak out, especially in college athletics, because so many of the athletes that play for these coaches are African American, and you'd have to know, okay, where are they on these important issues? And our next guest said that was part of her entire process before she went on to become a prominent college player and now a professional player in the WNBA.
Yeah, Rika Ngumbawale tweeted yesterday, college coaches are really showing their true colors right now. High school athletes, please take note. Play for a coach that's truly invested in you as a person and not just as an athlete. It's tough to differentiate, but I think their actions or lack thereof right now is a strong telling. And so I thought it was a very interesting perspective on this, as we're seeing more and more athletes at that level comfortable with speaking their truth.
And Arike Ogunbowale joins us now. Arike, thanks for being with us this morning. First and foremost, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well.
We're doing well. We appreciate it. And we're struck, for lack of a better term, by what you put out there. And I just wanted to know, how much of that was part of your process when you were going through this? How much did that mean to you, knowing that you were going to play for people at Notre Dame, that you felt completely got what you were about and had your back?
Yeah, I think just that was probably one of the biggest things, and especially how I was raised and, you know, how protective my family is and how close we are. They wanted to know that where they were going to be sending me for 4 years and, you know, a prime time in my life to become a, you know, young woman and an adult that I was going to be taken care of, and I felt comfortable. So that was definitely, you know, a big part of my process.
What made you feel so inclined to tweet that out yesterday, to get this message out to other athletes?
Just because I've just been seeing a lot of coaches make vague statements or make a statement on their not personal page, of course, but they'll go to the team page and say, on behalf of this, and it'll just be that. But, and I was looking at some coaches, like, I really respect Dawn Staley, and she said a lot of stuff on her page. Of course, Notre Dame, I said they tweeted, they all tweeted from their individual pages plus the Notre Dame page. And it's like, a lot of these schools have predominantly black, you know, athletes. They recruit all these black athletes. They want all these black athletes. But in times like this, they're not even speaking up or really protecting these girls. And they were just in their homes however many years ago saying they will, you know, help them grow, always had their back, blah, 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 blah. And they've been really quiet. So I feel like that's really important when you're about to send your daughter somewhere where you're looking for a school, is if times get rough, are they actually going to have your back like they say, or do they just want you because they know, you know, you're good at sports and you can help their program?
Do you need to hear something specific? Because there can be some statements that can be very mundane or very kind of middle of the road. Do you need, or are you telling these athletes you need to listen for certain cue words that would be more acceptable to understand who this coach is?
Yeah, I mean, it just, especially right now, like, just look at how they're talking, look at how they're speaking. Like, if they're talking, you know, like I said, really vaguely, just so they can put a statement on and say they've supported it, but they're not really getting to the root cause and they're not really speaking on it, like, in their statements, then they're just trying to, you know, cover it and make sure, yes, I'm showing face and have a, you know, statement on social media that I support this, but do they even really know what's going on? Or is it just because their PR told them to make a statement, or do they actually really care and care to be like, well, and obviously a lot of these coaches are white too, so it's not like they're going through what's going on. Like, it's not like they're black. It's not like they get the same feelings every day. But I've seen a lot of statements, like my WNBA coach, he said, I've never had to experience this, and I know I won't. But then he gave a statement, you know, supporting it, supporting his experiences, other experiences of black people that he knows. Like, you don't have to go through it in order to give a, you know, in-depth statement. Like, everybody knows what's going on. And if you try to act like you don't understand just because you're not black, or you don't want to, you know, say too much just because you're not black, then what does that mean? Because you have a lot of black athletes that look up to you and listen to you every day.
Erika Ngumbawale with us, former Notre Dame women's basketball player, current WNBA star. And Erika, I'm curious, at Notre Dame, at the time that you were there, Muffet McGraw was the head coach. She is a white woman. Mm-hmm. Were these conversations that you guys as a team and with your coaching staff would have when issues would come up that you felt strongly about?
Oh, 100%. Like, and that's why I love Coach McGraw so much. Like, even before me, she's always advocated for, you know, women, people of color. Like, equality is her biggest thing. So, like, I'm sure right after this happened in practice, we probably, not basketball, we would have went into the team room and just sat and talked about this. Everybody would have got their feelings out. Like, that's the kind of thing she does, and she would probably just listen to us. She'll give, you know, what she has to say. All the coaches will give their statements. Everybody would give how they feel, and we would actually sit there and dissect it and talk about it, because, you know, things don't change and people don't understand until you sit there and talk about it. And obviously at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame women's basketball is always a diverse team, so we would have got viewpoints from everybody, and that conversation would have been really, really good. So, like, I know Coach McGraw would have been on top of that right away, and I missed that. But also, you know, I'm in WNBA, so my head coach, Brian Agler, we've been having Zoom meetings. Our Zoom meeting this week was nothing about basketball. Everybody just sat and talked, you know, what they're thinking about the world and how they feel. So it's definitely good to have coaches like that, that they're both white, but they understand that people want to talk about this and people have feelings about this.
Yeah, Erika Ngumbawale with us. And I think that's the thing, is the three of us as white guys here.
Yeah.
One of the things that we've basically said, we want to listen. You know, we want to make sure we understand everything that goes on that is far different from our experiences. So as we go through this process now, where we've had so many protests in so many places, what are the things that you were hopeful for that we'll get to at some point down the road after this?
I mean, hopefully, you know, I mean, I'm not a big fan of, like, the, you know, looting and, you know, messing up everybody's businesses. But obviously, you know, I, like, retweet a statement of that MLK's son said, this is, like, the voice of the unheard. So definitely just hopefully things change, and hopefully this is a big step, and hopefully, you know, the system changes. And it's going to take a lot more than this, but I think there's a lot more notice, especially because of Corona. Everybody's at home, so I think there's a lot more people protesting that probably would be at work. So that's definitely just, if it were to happen, it's a good time to happen, because the world's at a stop, and it was so blatantly on camera that, like, even I think more white people that would have not said something or saying something, because how can you, you know, how can you say there's something wrong with this video? You're literally watching what happened on video. Like, it's not much to argue about. So hopefully this really, you know, starts a big change in, you know, the system.
One of the big changes that we've seen, and I'm really curious, of the four of us talking here, yeah. You were the most recent college athlete in the group. You were most recently a part of that time period and that time of your life. A lot of college athletes are speaking up right now in a way that certainly was not always the case when I was in school, and always seems like it's been a difficult battle just because of the way the power dynamic is in college sports. Did you see that change when you were in school? Is that something that's new to right now? Have you noticed a change in the way that college athletes are now approaching the way that they can be heard?
Yeah, I mean, I think just with this generation, like, we saw, you know, what happened to Trayvon Martin. We were probably like high school, and then we've just seen all these things where now we're older, we have platforms now, we're going to use it. Like, we've always wanted to speak out, we've been younger, but now that we're adults, nobody can really tell you what to say and what not to say. So I think, you know, all the younger kids that watch this stuff growing up, now that they, you know, can speak about it and have a platform, everybody's just, you know, saying what they have to say. And I know I love that. And then, so I think our generation is definitely going to, you know, help this, because we're really not afraid to say what's on our mind.
That is God's honest truth. Honestly, it's not a moment too soon.
But it's a great point that when some of the other horrific things were going on, Arike and others were very young, you know, and now,
right,
now
exactly.
Older, and as you mentioned, adults that can finally start speaking up about us. Arike, that's a great point. We appreciate you coming on and giving your point of view and based off your tweets about what high school athletes should look for in coaches. So very thoughtful. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
Thank you, Arike.
That is a great thought. I hadn't even thought about, because we're seeing the 24, 25-year-olds and stuff. And when some of this other stuff happened, they were younger. You know, it was maybe too young to where they would want to reach out and say something. Now they can do it with a little more context involved and being older, not old, but old enough to say, okay, we're the next generation, the next leaders of this world.
Yeah, and I think it's been a few things. You mentioned before social media and growing up with that as the language that so many of us speak and the platform that so many are used to, but also what sports has become. Every generation has had freedom fighters. Every generation has had people that speak out when they see injustice, but now we've got the combination of people having platforms and sports being such a huge part of society.
Right.
Like, it was always big, but college athletics being as big as they are now, we've seen the growth in all these leagues. We've talked about what the NBA came from as far as a business model for the league. All of these things that have now given a platform to people that have grown up used to having one and the confidence to speak like that. It's a very interesting time to see all of the lights go on for a lot of these athletes who are part of, as she said, that generation that sees it.
Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance, and we've seen, and you mentioned it earlier in SportsCenter and What's Trending, some of these athletes in these cities going out and cleaning up the streets after some of the looting and the rioting, helping the community come back in that way as well. And coming up next, one athlete who did that may also need to clean up what people think about him in his chosen sport by his own actions. It's interesting, and we'll get to that after this.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
It's going to be lit there.
You know why it's going to be lit there? Because we go hard. Boom.
It's Golic and Wingo.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you. Glad you're with us. ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. Going through a lot of stuff this morning, including more unrest in the streets last night and the protests over the killing of George Floyd, and so many people are saying enough. We've had enough, and we've seen a lot of people go out there. A lot of Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics drove 15 hours over the weekend to be down at a protest in Atlanta. We've seen lots and more of athletes from many, many parts in many different sports out there on the streets as well.
Yeah, seen plenty of guys going out and trying to be a part of certainly lifting up their communities and being a voice and being supportive during the things that have gone on and all this. And we've also seen guys now, as some of the destruction of property has happened, wanting to be part of helping their communities rebuild and making sure that they're going out and leading those efforts in a lot of instances.
And what's interesting is John Jones, John Bones Jones, guy you probably don't want to mess with.
Holy out, smokes.
He was out with people carrying spray cans in Albuquerque.
He wasn't with
no,
them.
No, he was there. Some people out there that had some pepper spray or whatever, and they looked like they were up to no good.
They had spray cans, and they were going to graffiti. And he basically went up to these guys, and he said, "Give me the can." And the one guy basically gave it to him right away, and he walked up to another guy, and the guy's like, "I'm not doing anything." He said, "Give me the can." He said, "But I'm," he said, "Give me the can."
Yeah.
And the dude eventually gave him the can. I'm like, "Dude, what are you doing?" I'm sure they didn't know. Maybe they did. If it was John Jones, could you imagine finding out the hard way that if you just stepped up to him and not only realized you were probably going to get beat up because he is a large, great-looking athlete, but then he just MMA'd you to death?
You give him the can or he's going to open up a can.
Wow.
So I guess that's the thing is, I think there's two thought processes. One is, you're right, just on like physical stature alone dictates that John Jones is someone that you give that can to. He's large, he's put together, like the rest of his family, who are all freak high-level athletes in all of this. And so there's that portion of it. But is there the idea that if you're going to get your bleep kicked by someone, is it almost better in that situation because it would be over sooner?
So quickly.
Like, it would be so, unless he wanted to draw it out, it would be so surgical that the only two sounds, as the old saying goes, would be him hitting you and then you hitting the pavement.
Correct.
In that instance, versus someone throwing haymakers at you and hitting a bunch of dumb stuff. Like,
I just remember, think of that line you always say. We talk about quarterbacks and running. Hey, kid, knowing the journey's over.
Exactly.
Give
right.
up the can.
It is absolutely done. So that's one part of why we're talking about John Jones. He's in, I don't want to say negotiations, he's in demands
yeah,
with the UFC basically saying, "I want a gazillion dollars," and Dana White saying no, and then he's accusing Dana White basically of trashing his legacy.
They make the Major League Baseball Players Association and the MLB owners seem like Adam Silver and Chris Paul.
So here, by the way, is Dana White responding to the idea that in somehow, some way, Dana White and the UFC have trashed John Jones' legacy.
Being the greatest of all time doesn't mean you get $30 million. Being able to sell. John Jones has done a lot of things to himself. He's saying, in one of his tweets, he was saying that I tarnished you? You've done a very good job of tarnishing you. I haven't done that. Hunter told him, "I'll walk in. You can come in here and walk through the numbers. I'll walk you through all the numbers." And he says, "I don't give a f- what the numbers are. I want what I want, and that's it. It's not how life works. Why don't you guys fly back and tell your boss, I don't give a f- what this company makes. This is what I want. You're going to give it to me. See how that works out for you."
To quote the dodgeball, interesting strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
Bold strategy.
Yeah. I mean,
see if it works out.
Wow. And listen, Dana's right. I mean, just look at the litany of things John Jones did to himself, put himself in a bad situation. There's no doubting when it's in the octagon what this guy is and what he may be thought of all time. But he has basically been at times a wreck outside of the octagon.
Well, and I guess that's the thing, though, is it's his reputation that's kept him out of the ring in times where it would have been opportune to make money, because so much of this is about promotion. Like, Conor McGregor has not done himself a lot of favors out of the ring. Conor McGregor's been wildly problematic out of the ring and a guy that probably doesn't have the most stellar reputation. But he's been a draw in
exactly
it.
Right.
And he's been a part of promoting in a way that this world, the fight game, as we often hear, rewards.
Well, that's why Dana said, you can be the greatest fighter of all time. That doesn't mean you get the most money. It is about draw. It's about interest. You can be the greatest fighter, have no personality or no draw, get in the ring, get no pay-per-view numbers, and it doesn't do any good.
Right.
It's all about what you can bring in, what you're worth there.
Well, it goes back to that conversation with Sam Darnold. What's a star? You know it when you see it, right? I mean, for whatever reason, Conor McGregor, whether it's the Irish accent or whatever, he seems to be a little flamboyant.
He's a showman.
He's a little more of a showman and attracts more of the peripheral crowd.
Well, and he was able to string enough of those fights together in enough of situations that amplified what he was doing to do that. With John Jones and the reputation, I think more of it is that, again, it cost him crucial moments along the way.
Because he went away.
Where he could have built similar momentum.
Exactly. It, just as the momentum would go, he'd be suspended. And he'd be out of sight, out of mind for a while. And then back. And it was back and forth too much, so he never gained that traction.
We're watching that happen with Conor McGregor right
now.
Yes,
we are.
Lost fight away from all of this draw kind of being a thing of the past, because these things tend to lose steam if you're out of sight, or, as we found out with Ronda Rousey, if you lose too much in succession.
Right. Yeah. So, again, I think they'll find a way to make it work, but they're not so great place right
that's
now.
That's, as I said, a bold negotiating strategy.
Give me what I want. I don't care.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see.
In negotiation terms, they are at an impasse.
That's exactly right. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to hear from some very important voices. Cavs head coach J.B. Bickerstaff will join us, as will the coach, Herm Edwards. You will want to hear what he has to say. Stay with us on Golic and Wingo.